Imagine buying a bookshelf, like hauling this incredibly heavy cardboard box all the way into your living room.
Oh, yeah, the worst part of the furniture buying experience.
Right, you're sweating, you finally get it open, you pull out the instruction manual and you open it up.
And you're looking for the little diagram with the screws and the wooden dowels.
Exactly. But instead of that, you just find a single blank piece of paper, and right in the middle, it just says, build a bookshelf.
I mean, you'd probably think it was a joke.
You would completely assume it was a manufacturing error. Or, I don't know, some weird practical joke at your expense. You'd ask for a refund immediately.
Because we are just so conditioned to expect the diagram.
Yes, the diagram, the parts list, the step-by-step arrows telling you exactly where, tab A meets slot B.
We basically demand that scaffolding.
We do. But today, we are actually looking at a financial text that does exactly that. I mean, it literally hands you a title and absolutely nothing else.
Which is fascinating.
It really is. And it might just be, honestly, the most brilliant piece of strategic framing you will encounter all year. So, welcome to today's custom-tailored deep dive.
Glad to be here for this one.
If you are listening to this, you already know our usual mission. We take your dense articles, your sprawling research papers, all that overwhelming noise of an information-heavy world.
And we try to distill it down to the core insights.
Right, but today's mission is entirely different. Today, we're attempting to extract a foundational philosophy from a singular, completely unconventional piece of source material that you sent our way.
It is a really unique challenge, to say the
It
least.
is. I mean, okay, let's unpack this because I have to immediately address the elephant in the room with you, our listener.
We really do.
The source material provided for this deep dive is delightfully, provocatively, I would say almost aggressively brief.
Aggressively brief is a great way to put it. We are stepping totally away from our typical terrain here.
Yeah, no data sets today.
Right, no historical case studies. We are looking at a text that literally forces us to reevaluate our relationship with instruction itself.
So I'm just going to reveal the text we are examining today. It is an excerpt from a work titled How to Make Your Money Work for You.
A very standard sounding title.
Extremely standard, but I am going to read the entire provided source text for you right now, from beginning to end. Are you ready?
Go for it.
It reads, excerpts from How to Make Your Money Work for You. How to Make Your Money Work for You.
And that's it.
That is the entirety of our text today.
It's just wild.
I mean, there is no chapter one, there is no introductory paragraph, there isn't even a list of 10 easy steps. It's just the title repeated.
The source we are analyzing is an exercise in absolute minimalism.
Complete.
It removes all the scaffolding we usually rely on when we want to learn a new concept. We are looking at what appears to be a foundational mindset shift, but it's disguised as a simple table of contents.
Or just a header.
Exactly. It is incredibly stark. It completely refuses to hold the reader's hand.
But before we get to the fact that the text is essentially just a repetition of its own title, which is a whole thing we're going to get into,
Oh, absolutely.
we need to examine the literal words provided in that phrase first. Like, why this specific wording?
The exact phrase, how to make your money work for you.
Right. Let's just look at the raw mechanics of that sentence.
What's fascinating here is the underlying psychological framing of those specific words.
Especially the word money.
Yes, particularly the personification of the word money. Because if you think about it, in almost every other context of our daily lives, human beings treat money as an inanimate, entirely passive object.
Oh, totally. It's just a thing.
It is a noun of ultimate passivity. You hold it, you store it in a bank.
You spend it.
Right, which essentially means you discard it in exchange for a good or service.
It's an object that is acted upon by external forces, mostly by simply moving it from one place to another.
Exactly. It's treated like a physical tool.
Like a wrench sitting on a workbench.
That's a great analogy.
Think about it. A wrench does absolutely nothing until you pick it up, apply physical force to it, and turn a bolt. It doesn't have any agency.
Right, it just exists.
Yeah.
But consider the verb attached to the currency in this title, work.
Great. Work.
By pairing money with the verb work, the text completely transforms the currency. It takes it from a passive object and turns it into an active agent.
It elevates money from a stagnant tool to an active participant.
Essentially an employee.
Okay, I want to visualize this because I think it's a massive shift in how we usually conceptualize our resources.
Walk us through it.
Imagine you open your wallet or, you open that drawer in your desk where you keep some emergency cash.
We all have that drawer.
Right. Instead of seeing inanimate pieces of paper or pulling up your banking app and just seeing static digital numbers on a screen, imagine you are looking at a tiny army of dollar bills.
I love this visual.
And they are all wearing tiny little yellow hard hats.
Naturally.
They have little steel-toed boots. They are a literal labor force standing in your desk drawer.
Just waiting.
But if you just leave them in that drawer, they are basically sleeping on the job.
They're completely idle.
Yeah, they are sitting around playing cards, waiting for instructions that never come.
The visual of the hard hats is so helpful because it highlights the crucial element in the text's phrasing, the word make.
Oh, right. Because the title is not How Your Money Works for You.
Exactly. As if it happens automatically. It does not. It is how to make your money work.
You are the foreman of this tiny construction crew. You can't just politely point at an empty lot and hope they build a house.
It won't do it.
You have to direct them. And we know what happens when you don't.
What happens?
It's like owning a piece of really expensive Sarmi equipment and just leaving it out in the rain.
Oh, that's rough.
Without maintenance, without a driver, without a clear purpose, it doesn't just sit there in a state of suspended animation. It rusts.
It depreciates.
Eventually, it becomes completely worthless.
The farming equipment analogy captures the concept of depreciation perfectly. The word make implies resistance.
It implies friction.
And inertia. You do not have to make water flow downhill.
Yeah, gravity handles that.
You do not have to make a fire burn as long as it has fuel and oxygen.
It just burns.
But you have to make money work. This linguistic choice suggests that the natural default state of currency, its physical property, if we can call it that, is either absolute stagnation or active dissipation.
Because of inflation, right?
Inflation, unexpected expenses, the psychological temptation to just consume, all of these are basically forces of nature that naturally erode the value of an idle resource.
So forcing it to work requires an active, intentional, and really strenuous intervention.
You have to overcome its natural inertia.
You have to take this inanimate concept, conceptualize it as a labor force, and then actively manage it. You have to give it a job description.
Which is not easy.
No. If you hire an employee and you never tell them what their daily tasks are, you can't be angry when the business fails to grow.
You're the bad manager in that scenario.
Exactly. If you don't tell your tiny, hard hat wearing dollars, hey, your job today is to go out into the market and recruit more dollars, or your job is to build a wall of security around my future, they're just going to sit in the break room.
This brings such a profound weight to the very first word of the text, how.
How?
The phrase acknowledges that managing this conceptual workforce is not an innate biological trait.
Nobody is born knowing how to direct a financial labor force.
It is a methodology that must be learned. The text promises to teach you the how and then completely subverts your expectation of what that teaching actually looks like.
Which brings us right to the actual excerpt provided to us today.
The core of the matter.
Because we have established what the title promises. It promises an active intervention. It promises to show you how to take your sleeping army of currency, hand out the blueprints, and turn them into active employees.
But then we transition past the title, and we get the actual content of the text.
And what we get is
the
revelation of the tautology. The source text explicitly reads, and I'll quote it again just so we're clear, excerpts from How to Make Your Money Work for You. How to Make Your Money Work for You.
It's an entirely enclosed loop.
Okay, so what does this all mean? Wait. I have to call a timeout here.
Sure.
I need to push back on this material for a second. I'm going to play the skeptic for anyone listening who is thinking the exact same thing right now.
Go for it.
You are calling this a deliberate tautology. You're talking about subverting expectations. But isn't the most logical Occam's razor explanation here that this is just a typo?
A formatting error.
Yeah, a formatting error on a website.
Yeah.
The author submitted a title. The publisher's content management system glitched. And it just duplicated the header instead of loading the body text. Are we sitting here projecting absolute genius onto a digital glitch?
Look, it is the most rational initial reaction to have.
Right.
When confronted with an absence of information where we strongly expect a surplus of it, the human brain immediately assumes an error has occurred.
It's a defense mechanism.
But if we analyze the material we have been given, treating the text as it exists literally in front of us, we are forced to confront the effect it has on the reader, regardless of the original author's intent.
Okay, so we're We're taking it as text as text.
Exactly. If we treat this source with the intellectual rigor requested for this deep dive, we have to explore the concept of the deliberate tautology.
Just to clarify, a tautology is a statement that repeats itself, right?
Yes, often thought of as a rhetorical fault, like saying free gift. But in philosophy, tautologies are frequently utilized to force a realization.
Give me an example of a tautology forcing a realization, because right now, repeating the title just feels like hitting a dead end in a maze.
Think about the phrase, it is what it is.
How interesting.
On a purely semantic level, that sentence conveys zero new information. A equals A.
It's completely redundant.
But culturally and psychologically, we use that phrase to signal the acceptance of an unchangeable reality.
Right, like stop fighting it.
Exactly. The repetition forces the speaker and the listener to stop looking for alternatives and just confront the immediate truth.
So how does that apply here?
In this text, the answer to the complex problem of financial management is framed simply as the recognition of the problem itself.
Okay, look at what is actually missing here. The excerpt contains absolutely no specific tactical steps.
Not at all.
It doesn't tell you to buy a specific index fund. It doesn't tell you to invest in real estate. It doesn't give you a breakdown of tax advantage accounts or anything like that.
The absence of tactics is the core message.
How so?
It implies something radical. It implies that the primary barrier to your goal, the goal of making your money work for you, is not tactical. It is conceptual.
You're saying that by just repeating the title, the text acts as a mirror.
Yes.
It's telling us that the secret isn't a hidden map or a proprietary formula. The secret is simply adopting the mindset.
That's it.
The biggest hurdle isn't learning how to swing the hammer. It's realizing that you were supposed to be holding a hammer in the first place.
Which is something people struggle with constantly. We constantly get bogged down looking for the perfect system.
Oh, analysis paralysis.
Exactly. We spend months researching the absolute optimal percentage yield on a savings account or the perfect portfolio allocation.
Just agonizing over a quarter of a percent.
Right. And in doing so, we delay taking any action at all. This text suggests that the how is answered simply by internalizing the imperative.
The repetition transforms the title into a mantra.
A mantra, like that.
Like a focal point in meditation. You don't repeat a mantra to learn new facts, you know. You repeat it to change your internal state.
That is exactly the mechanism I'm referring to. Think about the psychological concept of semantic satiation.
What's that?
When you repeat a word over and over again, it temporarily loses its literal meaning and becomes just a sound.
Oh, yeah. Like if you say the word bowl 20 times, it sounds like nonsense.
Exactly. But here we have a conceptual satiation. How to make your money work for you. You read it once as a consumer looking for a product.
Like, okay, teach me.
Right. Then you read it the second time after the colon as an internal imperative.
Like a command to yourself.
To make your money work for you, you must first constantly, relentlessly remind yourself to make your money work for you. It addresses the massive psychological gap between knowing something and actually executing it.
It completely strips away all the excuses.
It really does.
If the text had provided a tactical list, like, step one, save $10,000. Step two, buy this specific stock.
What would happen?
A reader could easily look at that and say, well, I don't have $10,000, so I guess this doesn't apply to me. I can't start.
It gives them an out.
The tactics give you a reason to opt out. But by just giving you the mantra, by repeating the premise and offering nothing else, it leaves you nowhere to hide.
You can't disagree with the tactical steps because there aren't any.
Exactly. You can only confront your own passivity.
It demands that the reader take ownership of the inquiry. When you ask the text, how do I do this? And the text answers with silence after repeating your question back to you, the burden of the answer shifts entirely to the asker.
Here's where it gets really interesting to me.
Yeah.
Because the text refuses to provide that bulleted list of instructions, it completely abandons the traditional guru model.
Oh, absolutely.
We live in an era of unprecedented information overload. If you want to learn how to do anything, you can find 1,000 self-proclaimed experts online.
All of them offering 1,000 different 10-step checklists.
We are addicted to the checklist.
Why do you think that addiction exists? What psychological comfort does the checklist provide?
I think it provides the comfort of outsourced blame.
Outsourced blame. Elaborate on that.
We want the checklist because it absolves us of the responsibility of critical thinking.
Right.
If I find a guru and I follow their 10 steps perfectly and my financial situation doesn't improve, it's not my fault.
That's the guru's fault.
Exactly. The manual was wrong. I did my part. I followed the instructions. But this source ruthlessly points the mirror back at the reader by offering a completely blank slate.
It's quite brilliant.
You can't blame the author for bad advice if the author refuses to give you any advice.
If we connect this to the bigger picture of individual agency, it is a masterclass in respecting the autonomy of the individual.
Autonomy, yes.
Why does a how-to guide provide a blank slate? Because personal endeavor, personal ambition, and personal resource management are inherently deeply personal.
They have to be. What constitutes working for you is going to look radically different depending on the specific realities of your life.
Vastly different.
If you are a 25-year-old listener trying to pay off student loans and build a foundation, the instructions you need are completely different from a 55-year-old listener who is trying to ensure their retirement savings outpace inflation.
If the text were to fill that blank space with specific instructions, it would inevitably alienate a massive portion of its audience.
It would have to.
It would be making blind assumptions about your life context, your risk tolerance, your dependence, your geographic location, and your ultimate goals.
It's impossible to write one list for everyone.
By providing only the title and repeating it to ensure you grasp the necessary mindset, the source forces you to fill in the blanks based entirely on the realities of your own life.
Let's do a thought experiment here. Let's role play what actually happens when a person is confronted with a title and an empty page.
Okay, let's play it out.
Imagine a listener sitting down at their kitchen table right now. They have a pen, they have a piece of paper. At the top of the paper, they write, "How to make your money work for you."
And then?
And then.
And then nothing.
Just pure white space beneath it. Initially, that blank page is terrifying.
The blank page is always a source of anxiety. It represents total freedom, which to the human mind is often indistinguishable from total responsibility.
Wow, yeah.
Without guardrails, the possibility of failure rests entirely on the author of the page.
But let's say our listener pushes past that initial panic of, you know, where are my instructions? They realize they're the only person on earth qualified to write those instructions.
They have to assess their own situation.
They have to look at their tiny army of hard hat dollars and ask, okay, what do I actually need built?
What's the project?
Right. Maybe they look at their life and realize, I work freelance. My income fluctuates wildly. What I need built right now is a fortress. I need my dollars to build an emergency fund so I can sleep at night.
So that becomes their first rule.
Exactly. Step one on their personal blank page becomes, direct all idle dollars to building the fortress.
And compare that to a different listener in a completely different scenario. A listener with a highly stable salary career, but no long-term assets.
Their blank page looks entirely different.
Completely. They might look at their workforce and say, the fortress is already built. I need you to go out and capture new territory.
I need you to generate a secondary income stream.
Right. Their step one is fundamentally different. The text allows both realities to exist perfectly within its framework because it refuses to constrain either listener with generic advice.
It really redefines the role of a teacher, doesn't it?
In what way?
We usually think of a teacher as someone who stands at the front of a room and dictates facts for us to memorize. You know, write this down. There will be a test on Friday.
The traditional authoritative model.
Right. But this text acts as a minimalist mentor. The best mentors don't solve the problem for you.
They don't just give you the answer key.
No, they ask the right question, they hand you the chalk, and they step back from the chalkboard.
It removes all the noise. It strips away the complex jargon, the conflicting theories of different economists, the overwhelming data sets, and leaves only the core, unadulterated objective.
Which is so refreshing.
It is a demand that you become an active participant in your own life, rather than a passive recipient of external dictates.
You have to step up.
When you are forced to define the how for yourself, the resulting strategy is inherently customized. It is deeply understood because you forged it.
You own it.
And you are far more likely to adhere to it during difficult times because you are its author. You aren't blindly trusting a stranger's map. You are navigating the terrain you mapped yourself.
You are the author. And that realization really brings us full circle to the very beginning of this deep dive.
Back to the bookshelf.
Exactly. We started by talking about that bookshelf instruction manual.
Yeah.
And how we expect someone to hand us a perfect schematic so we can just follow the lines without thinking.
A to B to C.
But what this singular piece of source material has shown us is that when it comes to the architecture of your own resources, you are not the consumer following a diagram.
You're not.
You are the architect. The gears, the pulleys, the blueprints, they are yours to invent.
To summarize the journey we've taken through these few words, we have moved from viewing resources as static, inanimate objects to conceptualizing them as an active, dynamic workforce requiring your active management.
The hard hats.
We explored how a tautological repetition functions not as an error, but as a mirror, shifting the focus from external tactical steps to the crucial internal mindset.
The mantra.
And we analyzed the terrifying yet ultimately empowering nature of the blank slate.
So to you, our listener, who came here today for a deep dive into what you probably thought would be standard financial source material.
You were probably expecting spreadsheets.
You were. Instead of being overwhelmed by data points and industry jargon, you were handed a philosophical puzzle to untangle. You were given the ultimate space to define your own path.
The primary takeaway here is that the core of strategy begins with a mindset shift rather than a secret formula.
It's all in the head first.
The realization that money must be directed and the empowerment of writing your own rulebook, those are the true lessons of the text.
As we wrap up today, I want to leave you with one final provocative thought to mull over on your own. It builds directly on that personification of currency we discussed at the very beginning.
The labor force.
Right. I want you to really visualize this tonight. If your money were literally an employee today and you are its boss, what kind of performance review would it give your management style?
That is a tough question.
Based purely on the instructions and the jobs you have assigned to it over the past year, would it say you are a visionary leader?
Or
would it say you leave your crew sitting in the break room with no direction at all?
An excellent framework for self-reflection.
Thank you so much for joining us on this conceptually deep, highly unconventional exploration. We will see you next time as we continue to dive deep into your sources. But until then, remember,
yeah,
you are the architect. There is no diagram. Go build a machine.